105 DGS and KMOX. Enjoy the gorgeous weather the next 3 days. Razor's Edge.
All right, Razor's Edge is going to be kind of a downer today. I apologize in advance, but that's just kind of where I'm at today, you guys. Okay, so my question for you guys is, how do you deal with the overall anxiety and stress that comes with being an adult person? I know that's a huge question, and I don't like it when people are like, "Oh, I'm adulting. I went to the post office and I mailed off my letter." Like, I think that's very silly. Like,
yeah,
we're all adults. We all carry on with our life. But I'm just like, there are days and periods of time where the stress just feels so like overwhelming. And then you're going, "Oh, this is just the rest of my, like, no one's coming in to save me from this. This is all on me."
Mm-hmm.
So my question for you guys, been doing it a little bit longer, like, how do you handle that fact?
Well, I don't know, because I've never been able to do it, because I have whatever you want to call it, anxiety disorder, panic disorder, have since I was a kid, comes from my childhood. Still not comfortable talking about exactly why, but we're being honest about things. And the way I spent much of my childhood, it's like baking a cake. If you undercook it, it's going to be raw. If you overcook it, it's going to be dry and crumbly. Same way with a kid. If they go through a certain kind of childhood, they're going to come out certain ways. And it could have gone a few different ways. For me, it went the anxiety route. And so I wish I knew what it was like to just face normal life, like anxiety. But I don't, because I see ghosts behind every tree. My radar's on high alert all the time. I take medication. I go to therapy. So it's like an eternal struggle for me. Sorry if that's too dark of an answer
it's
to
not.
A dark question. But like when I see my friends who don't have this going through stressors in their life, I'm jealous. Because I wish I could just face Phoebe going away to college. I wish I could just face turning 60. I wish I could just face XYZ. But I know that it's sort of like if everything you ate, there was a guy who stood behind you and poured the hottest hot sauce all over it, whatever it is. And everyone else is eating Thai food and they're like, "Woo, this is hot." And you're like, "You have no idea. You have no idea." Wheels?
Yeah,
probably the polar opposite.
Yeah, we're the opposite. And
I'm getting a good sample size here.
So there are a couple parts to it that I want to get to that I think are important to differentiate. What I'll say doesn't work for everybody, right? Because I know what works for me.
If you yell, "Let's go," I'm going to beat you up.
No, like, what works for me is not going to work for everybody. Like, it doesn't work for my wife. It will not work for her to be like I am, which is, if I can't control it, I don't worry about it.
That's the healthy thing.
No matter how bad the thing could be. Think of the worst thing you could think of. Something terrible happened to your kid. I can't control it. I can't do anything about it. My kid lives in North Carolina. There's short of having your kid in your house with you 24/7, and even then, there's nothing you can do to prevent the unpredictable. You can't. So I'm able to just say,
put it out of your mind.
Not going to worry about it because I can't do anything about it. So I only think about the things that I can control.
Mm-hmm.
I only think about the things that I can do. And I mean, like, I know it's not that you don't think about something else. You don't stick on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all right, that's a terrible thing. I don't want that to happen, but there's literally nothing I can do to change it. So I'm not going to continue to think about it. I'm going to move on to another thing. Sometimes, you know, and again, I know from everybody else that I know that not everybody does that. Not everybody can. My dad can't do it. My wife can't do it. My mom can't do it. But my brother does. My brother and I are very much like that, where if it's not in front of you and you can't change it, it's not going to dominate your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's like there's 330 million Americans. There's 8 billion people, and every person is slightly
somewhere
different
on the scale.
Right. And there's going to be a little bit of a difference there.
Yeah. Like as bad as mine feels, like, I don't have pathologic agoraphobia. I can leave the house.
Right.
I can go to social settings. I can talk to strangers. It gets a lot worse.
It gets
a lot worse than what I have.
Yeah. And I think that the best way that I found to deal with whatever is going to be a stressor or those things you're talking about, right, it's like being an adult, is take care of the things that can be taken care of, and then do fun stuff as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dead serious. Like, do fun things as often as you can. Whenever you have the free time to do something fun, do it. And if it gets in the way where it's going to cause a problem, like for me, if I were to say, I'm going to play games for 9 hours and I'm not going to go get my car fixed, or I'm not going to do my show prep. Well, that's not going to help.
Yeah.
That's going to make it worse yeah. as time goes by. But when you have the time that you have free, whatever mm-hmm. free means in your world, do what you want to do.
Where do you fall?
I know there are things that I can do to feel better, because I have a little bit of that just like baseline anxiety like you do, Dave. It's gotten a lot better in the past couple of years for a couple of reasons, but sometimes it does pop up. Like today, I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning and I felt awful and I couldn't go back to sleep, and I didn't go back to sleep. I've now been up for 12 hours. So that's chill and fun. And I know I just had a stressful day yesterday. We buried my grandpa yesterday, mm-hmm. or, you know, we had his mass yesterday. And I think that's part of it. But it's just like, I just have this anxiety, and it's not about any one particular thing. And it started at the beginning of the weekend, and I had like a list of things I wanted to get done this weekend. Like, not that I had to get done, but it's like, I will feel better if I get these things done. I'm a big to-do list maker. That really helps. I made my to-do list. I didn't do any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just kind of starts the cycle of like, ugh.
Yeah.
But I know that if I keep my mental hygiene clean, which is like meditating every day, praying every day, exercising, there are things you can do. It's just sometimes you feel so bad that you don't want to do those things
yeah.
that make you feel better. So sorry to be having like a therapy session in the middle of the DGS, yeah. but no. that's just kind of what it is today. It's
stuff that people go through.
Yeah.
There are thousands of people out there listening right now, and half of them are like, oh yeah, absolutely. And half of them are like wheels, where hopefully they're feeling really lucky that they won a sort of lottery.
It is. That's what it is. I mean, like it sometimes, I know it sounds like, you know, thumping your chest because you've done something. I didn't do any of this. It's like I didn't do anything to be 5'8",
yep.
just like the 6'10" guy didn't do anything to be 6'10".
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, there's parts of you that are just, it's going to be that way. And there, you can mold it, you can change it, but ultimately you're starting at a point.
Yeah.
Right?
For
it's what you're starting with.
Like, I've been going to therapy for 20 years, and it took 20 years because I'm a fairly bright guy, and I am an over intellectualizer. I will try to solve everything with my brain. And there are some things that you can, and there's some things that you can't. And this is one of those things that it took a long time to realize it. It took a long time to face it. It took a long time to understand it. Like, why does A lead to C, and what happens with B? And then once you do all of those things, which it took me to my mid to late 50s, then it's, can you keep it up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you kind of get a little bit of a hold on it, it's like living with a Doberman with rabies. You know, it's like you come to terms and you're like, we're cool, right? We're cool.
No bitey.
I gave you steak, but you never really turn your back on it.
Yeah, Dave, you make such a great point, because like I've said, I've struggled with this so much in the past, and then like, I did what I was supposed to do for so long, and then I was like, oh, I'm cured.
Yeah.
And that's the mistake I've made so many times in my life. I'm like, oh, it's over, and now things are just good. And that's not true. That's not how it works. Like,
no.
It's a journey that you have to keep moving forward, or else you're going to be stuck in the same place, or you're going to backtrack. That's how it happens. And I had just read something a couple days ago talking about being depressed, because I've been depressed my whole life. I don't know. I just have been. It's just been like a thing. And they say the best way to get over depression is to pretend that you're not depressed, because all of those things that you don't want to do, like if you wake up and you feel so bad, like you don't even want to take a shower that day. The shower is what's going to make you feel better. But your brain is telling you like it's pointless. It's not worth it. Just skip it.
Yeah.
Just move on. Like, your brain is just so mean to you in these moments.
Yeah.
And to push through that and be like, all right, I have to keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
And I don't want to make it seem like I'm like living in misery all the time, because I'm not. It's just, there are some days that it's just
It's not for wussies at all. But like I say, I really do try to think, you know, I have friends who inherited a bunch of money. I have friends who have made a bunch of money, and I see the way they live. And rather than giving into jealousy or resentment, I try to think, yeah, then there are people who watch their brother's face get eaten by a bear when they were 10. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one generally good outlook to have is, in the grand scheme, I'm doing okay.
I would say that this is something where when people talk about the good old days, I don't want to hear it. I think people in previous generations did everybody a disservice by pretending everything was okay, by pretending that there is a, quote, normal. Because there is no such thing. You cannot have normal with 8 billion people. There's no, like, this is what most are like. It's not. There's a zero and there's an 8 billion, and there's a level of all of them in between. But for generations, we did the whole thing where we're all going to pretend that everybody's happy. And that doesn't help, because then it sets up that false achieve, and it's not there. You're not going
to hold a beach ball under the water in a pool. It's going to pop up.
Right. It's like chasing the Holy Grail. You're not going to find it.
Yeah.
You're going to constantly be chasing, and you're not going to find it because you think there's this thing there that doesn't exist.
Yeah. Boy, I hope you realize how lucky you are.
I do. I mean, all the time.
Even,
I do.
Even the not having an internal dialogue thing is another just gift.
Yeah. But I have my own negatives.
Oh, hell yeah, you do. That's what the next segment's about.
That's Razor's Edge Part 2.
What's wrong with Wheeler?
So checking in on my young people social media thing, do I need to worry about the word demure and what it means and why it means it? Or will it be gone next week?
Yes, very. It's here to stay.
Be worried? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, ahead of wheels. Forever.
It's a TikTok video of this woman who's like, see the way I've done my makeup for work? I'm very demure, very mindful.
And it went viral.
It went viral, and now everyone is saying it.
Oh, I see.
Stars are saying it.
It's a very silly thing to have said, and it's a very silly thing to... It's one of those, you know, it's just one of those, like, earworms, kind of. Like, somebody says something, and then you repeat it because it sounds kind of silly.
So she'll be throwing out first pitches at Yankees games?
No.
She will. Yes, she will. She will be Kamala's new running mate.
She'll be rich, you think?
No.
No?
Like, for example, Haley Welch, right? The Hawk girl?
Yeah.
She's trying her very best to get rich off of it, and even that, I don't know if that's necessarily going to work. She's like launching a healthcare line, and she's like she's trying to get the TV show off the ground. She's got a website where you can pay to get she'll write a newsletter or something.
It's not what I thought you were going to say she would do for pay.
That's the thing. She's and the thing that you would kind of think that she would probably be trying to get off the ground, because she's a nice looking girl, and for what she went famous for, she's like, I will never, absolutely never, under any circumstances, subscribe to my newsletter.
Hey, good
and,
for her.
And yeah, good for her, for real.
Doing
but
a
it's
newsletter.
Like,
she's
I don't
funny
know
because
she's gonna get rich off of it.
She went to like PetSmart or something and bought all like thousands of dollars worth of pet food to donate, and she's just like, they tell me my 15 minutes will be up soon, so I figure I'll use it for something good.
Oh,
like,
that's right. Cute.
I don't blame her for trying to get ahead, for getting famous.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I would do the same thing.
Oh, you should. You
it's just weird
should.
That like a professional sports franchise would be like,
famous
that's
for
the one we want to
she
throw.
Did, that would be so awesome.
Oh my lord.
And we should make him famous. Like, look, life is short and life is hard. You gotta get that bag when you can get it. If you get an opportunity where everyone's looking at you and talking about you,
start dancing.
Get that bag. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Very demure, very demure. Mindful.
I'm going to try to be more demure.
It's the smartest
whatever
thing.
Whatever that means.
We should rebrand the show as very demure,
very mindful.
I am demure.
It's the smartest thing Cardi B ever said. She hasn't said all that much smart stuff, but the smartest thing she ever said was right after she started getting famous, and she started like doing a bunch of, you know, things that were annoying everybody or whatever. And she said, look, I'm trying to make as much money as I possibly can as fast as I can. Mm. Because I think she had an awareness that's like, look, all this can go
away.
She
lasted a lot longer than she thought she would.
Yeah. She's like, all this can go
Which
away
makes
like,
her smart.
Tomorrow. I'm going to get as much money as possible.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that I will soon not be famous.
Familiarity caused such contempt. Like, I used to really love Ryan Reynolds. Like, his brand of humor is right in my wheelhouse, and of course he's very attractive and charming. And now I can't stand him. Cannot stand him.
I think it's because with someone like Ryan Reynolds, because I used to be a bigger fan than I am now too, I think it's like, oh, you've just done this routine so many times that it feels like a routine now. Like, it stops feeling genuine. It just seems like the thing you do when a camera's on you. Or it's like, oh, let me do my little trick for you. It's like, okay, I've seen that before, though. Like, I was talking about him and his wife, Blake Lively, last week or the week before. I like them as a couple, but they're turning into one of those couples that are like, look what we did. Aren't we kooky and crazy? Yeah. And it just gets old.
Roasting each other online, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Isn't she in some trouble for being kind of a jerk to a journalist?
Well, that, and I think she also had said some anti-trans comments in the past, or had used some word, which she, even if she may have used some words that we maybe don't use anymore, the instance that I saw was from like 2010 or whatever,
yeah.
Which is like, everybody was saying
you
that.
You got to cancel the entire cast of Jersey Shore in that
case.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Because they said that word a lot on that show.
It's just what people said. Was it right? No. And we know that now. But it doesn't change the fact that
which
that's
makes
the
me
place
crazy
that society
because
is in.
That is what growth is.
Yeah. Learning and changing.
There are some extreme examples where it doesn't matter when you said it, it wasn't okay and it's not okay now. But for the most part, when all of us can admit.
Yeah.
Like, hell, I used to do voices for groups of people and things like that. It was not okay at the time, but everyone loved it and no one complained. And now 10, 15 years later, you live and you learn and you go, oh, here's why that wasn't cool. And that's why I won't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If your day sounds like
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through. You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. Time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Rick, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good, buddy. So I turned 60 on September 6th, and I've elected to celebrate by taking my kids to the game. I'm going to come up and see you in the booth.
Oh, you bet. That'll be awesome. Well, happy birthday coming up, and we'll make sure we celebrate. That's awesome.
I'm mostly doing it because Rooney asked me to.
Well, I guess he beat me to it. That's what I'll say. He beat me to it.
So some moves by the Cardinals. Not even sure if Rick's heard about them yet. Wheels, you want to line them out?
Yeah, I don't know if they gave you advance notice or anything, Rick, but they just posted this publicly that Matt Carpenter is back from the injured list. Jordan Walker is back to Memphis. Brandon Crawford has been released, and Lukin Baker is coming up from AAA Memphis to give them that presence against left-handers that they've been looking at. So obviously, interesting moves. Not unsurprising to see Carpenter back. A little surprising to see Crawford go. I would also say a little surprised on the Walker thing, but the way they were using him didn't look like he was going to get much playing time the next week or so.
Yeah, I mean, he had some opportunities, though, and did not take them. I mean,
right,
I think that's
right.
The simple way to say that. I mean, we're all hoping, we're all rooting for Jordan, and he had a big backing, but there was not, and I think he's going to be a great player in the game, but he's just not yet. And so I just feel like, you know, the eyes tell you one thing, but the numbers tell you another, and I think you give Lukin Baker a chance. I think that's a good move, too, but honestly, I think this is a great commercial for watching the DGS show because people find stuff out, including me. So, no, I had no idea.
Well, I wanted to ask you, too, Rick. You don't have to break down Lukin Baker specifically.
Yeah.
But just generally speaking, he's had a ton of success at AAA. I mean, he's 30 homers in each of the last 2 years, I think, in like 320 games, 84 home runs, right? A lot of power at AAA. He was a TCU player, so he's a big-time college guy. Clearly has holes in his game, but one of the things he's done extraordinarily well at every level all of his career is destroy lefties. So my question to you is, how hard is it to try to translate what works at AA, AAA, especially when a guy's had an extended run at AAA, and what will work at the major league level?
Well, I would say that it's hard. It's harder than ever, but it's doable. So all those things I would say. So the point is, there's a bigger separation in my mind between the, and every developmental person says that,
yeah,
between AA and AAA in the big leagues now, because guys are rushed there. There's less minor league teams, so you don't have three teams at A ball and two teams at rookie ball. You just kind of get everybody up there fast, and so they're still learning the game. So I think that it does make it tough, and the information's so great at the big league level, they'll exploit whatever you can't hit. But I'm not saying it's not doable. Some guys just respond to it. You know, I think Mason Wynn's a guy,
yeah,
that when he got to the big leagues, he had a bit of a struggle, but then he responded by saying, I'm going to get that next level, find out what they're doing to me, and make some changes and do it. And that's where the opportunity is for a minor league guy who gets to the big leagues. You've got to figure out how they're pitching you. And Luken Baker, when he was up the first time, he was late on a lot of fastballs. So is he going to be late? Is he going to gear up but still protect the breaking ball? That's the goal for him, and everybody's rooting for him. But you can't necessarily say he's going to hit 32 home runs in the big leagues because he did it in AAA.
Right, right. And this is a clear. It seems clear, Rick, that this is a case where he's probably going to be in that exclusive role against lefties, whether it's pinch hitting late or playing, you know, starting on days when you're facing a lefty. Because it seems like he's more likely to fit into that kind of what you would call a part-time role than what you want Jordan Walker to do. You don't want Jordan to sit around for 5 or 6 days,
right,
and then only face the lefties.
So Walker could play left field, he could play right field, and you have three outfielders. Luken Baker plays first base, and that's it.
Yep.
Paul Goldschmidt,
yep,
plays first base, and that's it. So that's the
Matt
point,
Carpenter,
I think,
too.
And Matt Carpenter too. So you don't, and you know, at least he has played other places, but that's all Luke. If Luken Baker was a third baseman, second baseman, we'd have seen him much earlier, obviously.
Yeah.
But that's part of the problem with bringing him up. But you know, I sometimes you just have to make him. Bob Forrest used to say, sometimes you got to make a move even if it's wrong. So I think the Cardinals are at that point where you got to just do something different.
So all due respect to Carpenter, who is a beloved Cardinal. I certainly love the guy, and who can come up with some pop every now and then, a good pinch hit a home run. But why this late in the year do you keep him and not just keep Jordan Walker up here and keep plugging away?
Well, you know, I think in some ways you're trying to figure out what's best for the team. There's one thing, and then what's best for the individual. I think this is more about Jordan Walker than it is Matt Carpenter.
Hmm.
I mean, I feel like you don't want to bury Jordan Walker by having him kind of, you know, have bad at-bats at the big leagues and start to doubt again. I mean, I think he's got to, you know, he's got to take some things that he's kind of working on at the big league level, take it down to AAA, and, you know, and kind of explode. And you know, he's hitting 250 in AAA, 240-something. I mean, that's not, you know, it could be, and it's another question. We talked about this last week. It's just as legitimate a question to ask, why is he here in the first place? I mean, he's not really doing much in AAA. So, I love Jordan Walker, and I'm rooting for him. But the point is, you still have to earn what you get in this, yeah, game. You don't earn it by being drafted in the first round. You earn it by playing well, and that's always been the case.
Rick, yesterday, and I legitimately don't remember who said it, because we had Bernie on, and I think maybe he was even quoting Sonny Gray. It could have been Paulie last night in the pregame, but someone said that what the Cardinals have to do, because you know, we all know we have to win, but this is the first like empirical thing I had heard,
yeah,
is we have to win the close ones. You're going to lose,
yeah,
6-2 every now and then, but when you're in the,
yep,
game in the seventh inning and you're down by one or two or up by one or two, those are the games you absolutely have to win the rest of the season.
Yeah, post Mother's Day for 50 games, the Cardinals were the best team in the National League, and they were that because they pitched well and they won a lot of close games. They were playing a lot of close games even in that time. They weren't hitting great, but you know, the way you win close games, every once in a while you got to have that seventh, eighth, ninth inning comeback. We haven't had enough of those,
yeah,
frankly. And
no,
you know, we're not really, by the way, I don't think we're chasing the Brewers anymore. And so you want to beat the Brewers because, well, you just want to. But the point is, What you really want is for Atlanta to lose and for the Mets to lose. I mean, that's honestly the competition right now in the at least in the short term for the Cardinals is to be make up ground and push ahead towards those wild card teams, because that to me is the most gettable thing.
Rick, talk bigger picture. I don't know. This might even qualify as a Dave question coming from Wheeler, but bigger picture, you know, when you're facing this, this is clearly crunch time, right? You don't have a lot of games and you've got some ground to make up against multiple teams, as you just outlined. What's the balance between kicking it into gear, pushing, whatever, and not trying to do too much and getting away from what you're normally capable of? Because obviously we all try hard. I mean, these guys, that's, I think that's something sometimes fans forget. They're all trying hard. Sometimes trying harder is not the answer.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd say both Dave and I have tears in our eyes. People can't see it because you're actually asking a Dave question.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a moving moment.
It's a big
day. This is really big time.
Ricky,
I mean,
he appeared almost human for a moment.
He did.
Instead of criticizing, asking a question.
I love it. Well, it is a good question, and I would say, generally speaking, trying too hard is the worst thing to do. I did an interview with Rick Ankiel this week at the ballpark for some sponsors, and one of the things he said is he started to go south when he started overthinking in terms of his yips. And every player knows that, is confidence tells you, I know how to do this, I'm doing it. And when the more you think about it, you might deconstruct what you do naturally and then start doing it unnaturally. And so pressing is exactly the wrong way to go. I would say the better way to go is to just, you know, whatever you need to get yourself, I mean, watch video of you playing well or pitching well, and or just contemplate that, or just wake up in the morning and, you know, look into the mirror and say, I'm good, everybody loves me, or whatever that guy did on Saturday Night Live. Whatever it takes to get in a positive frame of mind to play this game, because it's tough, and pressing is usually the wrong direction.
And you know who I think emulates that the best? Because, you know, we're all athletes, and I don't play hockey, but I can watch a game and go, that guy, he's a killer right there, is Mason Wynn. One of the youngest guys on the team in his first year. He's cocky as hell, but you can tell it's controlled. He doesn't let himself get over his skis.
Yeah, he's got a lot of flair to him, and he's got a confidence to him. And, you know, it's interesting you call him cocky. I think there's a great there's a fine line between arrogance and cockiness in baseball and confidence. And I think, you know, you want to get as up to that line as you can be. I mean, if you're all about flair and cockiness, that kind of bites you too. And, you know, the game is a humbler. But if it's just true confidence, you can read that in the face of a player. And that's what you're talking about. You can see it in the face of Mason Wynn. And he's 22 years old.
Yeah.
But he's not uncomfortable in any situation and in any at-bat. And it doesn't matter who the pitcher is. And honestly, I think he may be the most confident right now of anybody on that field for the Cardinals.
Another guy like that's Burley. You know, he just, when he's up there, even if and I heard him talk about this, he said, I get to a lot of 0-2s because I know I can hit 0-2.
Yeah.
So I take my hacks at the first couple of pitches. I try not to swing, you know, at crazy pitches. But I know if I'm down 0-2, I have a fighting chance of still getting a base hit. I love that.
So who carried carried the Cardinals guys during those 50 days when the Cardinals were winning?
Those
it
guys.
It was Burleson and Wynn.
Yeah.
Those two guys at the top of the order. So we got to get them going again and hopefully get some supporting cast.
All right. Well, it looks like it's going to be an interesting end to the season. The Cardinals are making some moves, which I agree with Mr. Forsh. Make a move, even if it's not the right one.
Yeah.
Let's do something.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Rick.
All right, guys. You bet.
250 DGS. So I'm an agnostic, and 20 plus years ago, I used to be an atheist. For me, at least, it was because I was immature intellectually and emotionally and mad at the world. And so that's the way it came out. And one person in my life challenged me, study the Shroud of Turin and tell me that you can confidently say and prove that that's not the burial shroud of Christ. So I did a deep, deep dive. I mean, like, I read every book. There was a guy who had written the definitive book. He used to be a constant guest on the show. And to this day, I cannot. To this day, it bothers me because scientifically what I looked at suggested that it was something weird. Somehow this thing was imprinted with, you know, radioactivity, and there are microscopic images of the flagrum that was used to beat this person and the blood. And I couldn't do it. And so it's not enough that it has convinced me to be a believer, but it screws with me to this day. And there was the very famous carbon dating test where it came out to like the 1300s. And there's the picture of the very smug professor sitting there with his arms crossed, showing that, see, I told you it was a medieval hoax. And it showed up in 1280. And it's because it was, you know, a medieval linen, what have you. They recently did more tests, more sophisticated tests, where it came out that the carbon dating was like 2000 years ago. So again, a bugaboo. Just sticks in my craw. Mm. And it's fascinating. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only, I don't have a take on it, like real or not real.
Most people don't.
No. And I just, because it's the same thing. I don't know. I don't know any better than anybody else. But the burden of proof is on the claimant.
Agreed.
If you're going to claim it's real, the burden of proof is to prove that it's real. Because you really can't prove that it's not real. It's like, I know the whole...
I mean, you could, but no one has yet.
Well, no, right. I'm saying...
Like, if we had, like, great documentation that Leonardo da Vinci made it, which is one of the theories.
Right.
He had notes and he had sketches and, you know, practice tries. Right. But, yeah, so far no one's presented proof then, either way.
Right. So, that falls into the, just going to have to let it sit there for a while.
But whatever it is amazing. Because let's say that someone in 1280 figured this thing out, and how hundreds of years later someone would take a picture of it and the negative of it would show up clearer than the positive of it, and that you would be able to track the blood, you'd be able to track the marks and the scourge marks. That's a special kind of genius for 1200 AD.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it is a work of art or forgery, that's one of the smartest people who ever lived.
Dave, I'm sorry. What was the point of that story, to say that that is what turned you into an agnostic?
No, not so much. It's just that I would have never even broached the topic, except that I was such an a-hole atheist at the time. And my friend was like, well, why don't you check this out and tell me that it's not real? And so I dove into those books because I couldn't wait to be smarter than my friend, smarter than everyone, and show how, well, it's an obvious fake and forgery because of XYZ. And there are many books that have been written about how it's a fake or a forgery. But me being a fairly intellectually honest person, when I got to the end of my studies, I was like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. But it didn't convince me to be a believer. I don't think things like that should. That feels a little bit performative if there's really a God.
I was just curious because, you know, you said 20 years ago you're an atheist. Now you're an agnostic. I've been around you for at least 10 years now, and you've been an agnostic that whole time. Yeah. I was just kind of wondering how that happened. Just like a gradual softening.
Up. Yeah, just growing up.
Yeah.
And realizing that, so I had gone through something trying in my 20s, and I was in law school, and I was at WashU, so of course I'm a genius. And I had been in Christian rock bands, and I was the one to give the invitation to come accept Christ. And some things went bad in my life. And in very much like in the story of Dracula, I just shook my fist at God, and I'm like, well, it's on between me and you. You know, I was your golden boy. You screwed me over. So it's on. We're enemies now. And, you know, you look back at that, and I was 26 going on 14, and I was 48 going on 36. You know what I mean? I've always been a very late grower upper, but a part of growing up is being able to at least admit that and look back and go, well, I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And it was emotional, and it was sort of akin to wearing sandals until Thanksgiving and not putting the windows in my Jeep. People are going to love it if I'm an atheist.
No, but I mean, like, you're right, though. The whole point is recognition.
Yes.
Right? Not just blindly moving forward like something didn't happen or that everything was always perfect.
Yes.
That ability to be like, yeah, you know what? I screwed that up. Or I had that wrong. Or I just was too certain.
And not needing to run to the other side immediately. I need to be extreme about this in one way or the other. Like, the extremities haven't worked for me very well.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.